Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month in this country, and today there is an area-wide campaign in Milwaukee, Denim Day. It's focused on believing in and supporting survivors of sexual assault. We'll talk about how this began in Italy several years ago and why it began in just a little while. But one of the areas of concern in this year's Sexual Assault Awareness Month is sexual assault on campus. And some of the numbers, these are from the Women's Resource Center at UWM, are just incredible. One out of six college women have been sexually assaulted or have been the victim of an attempted rape during the previous year. Only 12% of undergraduate women whose experience fit the definition of rape identified themselves as rape victims. 84% of men whose actions matched the legal definition of rape said they felt their actions were definitely not rape. There are a huge number of sexual assaults that take place in our state and in our country every year, and we're going to be talking about what we do about that, why that is the case, and how we give support, survivor support. So all of that is on the table this hour. We're going to have several guests with us. Mayor Tom Barrett is one of the co-chairs of this year's Denim Day. We Stand With Survivors. Also joining us during the program, Aaron Perkins, who's coordinator of the City of Milwaukee Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And Sue McCarthy will also join us, assistant director of the Women's Resource Center at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. We'll start with Mayor Barrett. We're going to be welcoming phone calls during the course of this hour as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Mayor Barrett. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. It's always good to be on your show.
This city really has been at the forefront, I think, of addressing sexual assault and sexual violence issues for a number of years, hasn't it?
Well, it has, and we've had a longstanding commission on domestic violence and sexual assault, and we're very happy that Aaron is the coordinator of that right now. So we're one of the cities that has one of the longest commitments to this issue because it's an important issue.
Mm-hmm. Today's focus is college campuses in the Milwaukee area. Why are you focusing on college campuses?
Well, if you look at just the history of Denim Day itself, that involved an 18-year-old woman. And so when you think of women and going to college, and as you said in your preliminary remarks there, so many of these incidents take place among people who are college age or take place on colleges. And this year we're proud to say that seven college presidents, chancellors, and leaders have signed on to our Denim Day pledge. And that includes the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, El Verno, MATC, Mount Mary, Marquette, Bryan Stratton, and Concordia. All recognize that this is an important issue, primarily for the women on their campuses.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, let's hear from you of the story of how Denim Day, how we're marking it in the Milwaukee area, and the story that got so many people outraged.
So what initially happened was back in 1997, there was an Italian case where there was a young woman who was sexually assaulted by her driving instructor. And the Italian Supreme Court overturned his conviction because they said that because her jeans were so tight, she had to have removed them. And by removing them, she was consenting to sexual assault. So now there's an international campaign where people wear denim in recognition and in honor of that victim and victims everywhere. And it also helps to raise awareness of just sexual assault as an issue in general. In Milwaukee, the issue really started getting attention a couple years ago, and I will definitely give credit to Don Helmrich of United Way for helping to bring this campaign to Milwaukee. And it really just started with a bunch of grassroots people and a lot of different organizations coming to the table, and only recently did the city become involved. We also have great partnerships with Aurora and the Healing Center and a number of great community organizations that came to the table to organize what you see today with press conferences and wonderful events like the Hope Shining Blue event and a number of other events that are going on around town from other nonprofits and other organizations, college campuses, who are all doing events in recognition of Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Denim Day.
Yeah. Mayor Barrett, let me ask you this. You read these statistics and they're depressing. You wonder what in the world is going on in our society. And I know that you're dealing with violence on all levels in the city and that it's something that we're concerned about. But what's going on? Why is there so much sexual assault?
Well, I remember the first time that these statistics were presented to me, I was shocked and probably was disbelieving. Because they are so shocking. When you think about every 2 minutes, someone, a man or woman, young or old, is sexually assaulted in our country, and on campuses, it's very common as well. And I think what a lot of it has to revolve around is an understanding of what constitutes sexual assault. Because as you said again in your preliminary comments, many of the men don't feel that their actions rise to that level, and many of the women feel that they do. And from the definition of sexual assault, they certainly do. And so there's a gender gap here that's huge in terms of what is appropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that police forces, that young people, older people, do you think that we all have a pretty good understanding of what sexual assault is and how to help survivors of sexual assault? Or is this still something that we want to not talk about?
Oh, I think it's something that's being talked about more, and I think that that's a positive step. I think for many, many years it wasn't talked about, but the reality still is that if you talk about rapists, 97% of rapists will not spend one night in jail.
Really? 97%?
Yeah. And so much of this is cultural, and we talked about this morning. Women are afraid to come forward because they're afraid that they won't be believed. They feel that they won't be supported by their families or their friends. And they're afraid of going into the criminal justice system. And so one of the things that we're proud of here in Milwaukee is that we're initiating a new practice that will permit advocates from Aurora's Hospital Healing Center to accompany victims and stay with them during police interviews so that they can provide them support and resource information. Because it's a pretty daunting task for a woman alone to go into this criminal justice system and for something that's very, very scary and oftentimes very embarrassing for them.
Mm-hmm. It seems as though, and I know that we've talked about this before, but it also seems as though we need some kind of campaign to let young men know, and young men are sometimes the victim of sexual assault too, we must say, but to let people know what appropriate behavior is. I was looking at this Huffington Post article a few days ago. That it was a study done by a professor at Marquette University who looked at 100 girls between the ages of 3 and 17, and they were talking about just, you know, what is normal in the school. One participant said that harassment is standard. They grab you, they touch your butt, they try to, like, touch you in the front. And she says, I never thought about it as a big deal because it happens to everybody. Well, it should be a big deal.
Right, right. But I think part of the challenge, too, is oftentimes, in fact, most rapes are committed by someone the survivor knows.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with family members, you're dealing with friends, you're dealing with partners, and they have a familiarity and they cross that line.
Have we seen numbers at all go down since we've been focusing attention in Milwaukee and in this country, Aaron?
Well, there's a lot of different things that go into trying to account for sexual assault. And one of the biggest truths or one of the things that's absolutely true of sexual assault is that it's incredibly underreported. So it can be a challenge to try to really get a grasp on what the trends do look like. I would say that, you know, we know that there's 1 in 5 women that are who have been victims of rape in their lifetime. We know that 1 in 71 men have been victims of rape in their lifetime. We also know that when you start looking at other types of sexual assault, so not even just rape, which, you know, of course, also have difficulties when you're trying to account for them in reports, because oftentimes, like the mayor alluded to, people just don't know what sexual assault is. They don't know that it's much broader than just rape. And even the Marquette study alluded to that as well, where the children kind of have this concept, or adolescents have this concept, that if it's not a real rape, and I say that with air quotes, real rape, that it's not something that they have to worry about. It's something that they can dismiss. So if it's sort of hands-off contact, if it's just lewd remarks that someone makes, if it's, you know, if it's anything other than that forced sexual activity or intercourse, then people don't always report it. So there is some difficulty in trying to account for sexual assault. But we can definitely say that it is a problem, that there are many, many people who experience this, and whether it's rape or other kinds of, you know, the broader activities that fall under sexual violence.
Mm-hmm. And Mayor Barrett, before we let you go, the message that you want to leave with people in this area about Denim Day?
Well, I think we should change the way we think about sexual assault. I think that first and foremost. And as Aaron was saying, sexual assault is not just the violent act that you see on TV that's perpetrated by a scary-looking stranger. What we're talking about here includes harassment, abuse, essentially any unwanted or coerced assault that's completed or attempted. And so when you think about it and how we interact, whether it's with men or women, we shouldn't be focusing on, well, what was she wearing, which was exactly what the issue was
right. That
led to the creation of Denim Day. As a father, I always counsel my daughters not to walk home alone. But if they do walk home alone, that doesn't mean they're inviting something. Mm-hmm. So saying, why did you walk home alone, it may not be smart. And I would say that. It's not smart. But that doesn't mean that you deserve something. And the whole issue of alcohol, whether it's did he drink so much or whether she drank so much. But at the end of the day, we have to hold the perpetrators accountable. And I think that's what's essential for changing a culture where sexual assault has become the norm. It's never acceptable.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor Barrett, very much. Joining us in our studios, continuing to be with us in the studio, Aaron Perkins, who's coordinator of the City of Milwaukee Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Sue McCarthy is also joining us, assistant director of the Women's Resource Center at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. Sue, thank you so much for being with us. I was reading over the program that you have at UWM, which is really very, very extensive. It's information that should be given to every, I hope it is, incoming student about what's available there and how the campus is responding to reports of sexual assault or sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do offer a number of prevention and intervention to sexual assault on college campus, on our college campus, and campuses across the country do similar work as well. And because of some of the national efforts that have been made recently, so there's been the establishment of the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault that came out of the White House Council for Women and Girls. And that task force was just established earlier this year. We also have the Campus Save Act, which came out of something known as the Cleary Act, which is more focused on encouraging and mandating campuses to report incidences of crime and security measures. And then we also have Title IX, which is focused, often understood in terms of athletics and equality in athletics. So it really started to, engage the issue of women and equity. And part of that sort of went unnoticed for a while, was that it also addressed sex-based discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual assault. Mm. So coming out of the Office of Civil Rights in 2011, they sort of reissued guidance around the importance of attending to these issues on college campuses. So there's a lot more leadership and support surrounding this issue, and it's very, it's really helpful and very refreshing to see.
Yeah. The mayor talked about, I think he said 7 out of 10, involve somebody that the victim knows. So where is this happening? Is it happening in people's homes? Is it happening with somebody who might be a boyfriend? Or where is this? Where are we seeing this kind of assault?
And I would say that it depends sort of on what the community is that you're looking at. In my particular lens with the college campus community, oftentimes it might be in the residence halls, it might be at the place where there was a house party, it could be a student's apartment on or off campus, where we met up to study, that kind of thing. On the college campus, I would venture to say that 90% of sexual assaults are acquaintances versus the a stranger situation that's the vast minority of assaults.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that it's a significant problem on campus? right now, not only on UWM campus, but a significant problem on U.S. campuses?
Absolutely.
Really?
So across the country, this is one of the major problems that college campuses are facing. And I would suggest that it probably has been for quite a very long time, and it's just the fact that in recent years, a great deal more attention has been paid to it, and there's been greater leadership around the issue. The mayor was alluding to the age at which many young women are assaulted and talking about that. And college women are at higher risk for all forms of gendered violence. So not just sexual harassment, but also stalking and domestic violence, dating violence, those sorts of things. So the Campus Save Act actually addresses our need to pay attention to that whole range of gendered violence.
Mm-hmm. Why is it such a problem, Erin? I just want to have a better understanding of this. Why? What's going on?
On college campuses or
everywhere?
Well, I think we do live in a culture that in some ways kinds of condones some of this behavior. And there's a lot of different things that play into it. We have, like in the Marquette study, you had those girls talking about this sort of boys will be boys sort of mentality, mm-hmm. where when these things do happen, that it's just something that they just accept as the norm and as something that just happens anyhow. I think part of it is just misinformation. People just don't know what sexual assault is. They don't know how broad it can be or that they've experienced it themselves. You know, I think some of it and a lot of the myths that we have that are perpetuated help people to feel comfortable. If they just don't walk in dark alleys at night, if they just don't wear a short skirt, if they just don't drink to excess, then they're safe. But the fact of the matter is, people have been sexually assaulted even if they haven't been drinking, even if they've been wearing burqas or military uniforms. People have been sexually assaulted in their own homes. They didn't have to be walking around out in some dimly lit alley somewhere. So I think there's a reluctance to even want to talk about the issue to begin with, but then there's also sort of a lack of information about it. People don't know what the resources are, which is also a challenge. And I think those are sort of some of the key issues that sort of help this issue to continue today. That being said, I think there's a lot that can be done to help combat that. As shocking as the statistics are, there's a lot that's being done in Milwaukee and throughout the country. You know, the president did put forth this report of recommendations and the call to action about sexual assault and what can be done on college campuses. On a national level, there's been more investment or more funding put towards, like, the Violence Against Women Act and resources for sexual assault victims and legislation to support better systems in place for victims of sexual assault. Locally, we also have that advocacy protocol that the mayor talked about, which has been advocated for years, and to finally get it is a major victory that advocates have really wanted and survivors are really going to benefit from, to have that person that's in their corner during these interviews and can support them and help them get the resources that they need to continue through what the mayor rightfully said is a very intimidating system sometimes. And then we also have the need to do that broader community education. And actually, right now in our health department, we have a fellow that's working with us to develop a community readiness assessment so that we can look at how ready is Milwaukee for certain kinds of community education efforts, how can we better tailor this to our community, and how can we let people know what resources are out there, because there's a lot of them, and we really want to make sure that people are finding out where they are so that they can get what they need.
Right. We'll start taking phone calls. We'll welcome them at least and go back to our conversation and focus more on victims of sexual assault and why it is they don't come forward and how intimidating and what is the process that makes it so intimidating for people. I can understand your state of mind is probably awful and could be forever. So, of course, going into the legal system would be another level of intimidation and make you pretty scared, even more scared. What about what kinds of programs are available on campus, specifically on UWM, for treatment of women who have been assaulted? And what's your explanation, you the audience, of why we have these massively high numbers? It's just really big. And we're focusing today, because of Denim Day, on college campuses. But one out of six college women sexually assaulted or have been the victim of an attempted rape during the previous year. 7 out of 10 rape or sexual assault victims know their attacker. What do we do about this? Do we have to figure out, tell people, you know, this is the right way to live and this is wrong? What's happened to us? We lost our moral compass. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Sue McCarthy is one of our guests. She is Assistant Director of the Women's Resource Center at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Erin Perkins is Coordinator of the City of Milwaukee Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Judy sent an email saying this, that cigarette commercials are kept off TV because we're afraid they will influence children to smoke. So why is it we never make the connection between all the TV violence and the increasing violence in our society? Celebrities are paid big money to portray this violence. As long as people are willing to support the corporations that fund this kind of violence on TV, we will never be rid of it. Better plan to see violence in our society rise accordingly. Sue?
Absolutely. I can speak to that a little bit, and I appreciate the reference to tobacco. So just the other day when we were talking with the Dean of School of Public Health at UWM, Meg DePeck, she was really encouraging around focusing this issue as a public health issue and addressing it sort of in the macro and micro ways that tobacco was and is still being addressed. And certainly the culture of violence that we have in this country is part of what supports and reproduces the problem of sexual violence that we have in our country. So Erin was referring to that earlier. And all of those messages around aggression and the use of violence as a way to get one's way in the world and to establish power and all the ways in which that's tied into heteronormative thinking and dominant ways of discourse and what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, all of those messages that are so prominent in the media and the objectification of women all play a part in perpetuating this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you talk about it being a public health issue, it really is. When you describe the treatment that women need when they come in, they have to have STD treatments to see if there's trauma to their body. Psychologically, you can be a mess for a long, long time if you're a victim of this kind of assault, can't you?
Absolutely. And you know, I think that without a question, there's a medical cost for victims of sexual assault. I believe the estimates are somewhere between like $80,000. It can go all the way up into the range of $200,000, just a medical cost for one survivor of sexual assault. So there's immediate medical needs that they have. Of course, there's also the long-term trauma and the impact of mental health disorders. They are susceptible to anxiety, to depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a whole array of mental health disorders that can afflict someone who's been a victim of sexual assault. I'll also kind of piggyback off of your remarks and then also kind of get back to the question about changing culture and talking about this whole cultural violence that we live in, and also getting back to the remarkable Magda Peck and her reference to tobacco, which fittingly the caller or the person that wrote in had mentioned, was that you can shift culture. That at one point, tobacco use was okay. It was everywhere.
Sure.
But over time, we changed it. And I think that especially because violence is a learned behavior, that there is that potential to be able to make that cultural shift. We are starting to have these cultural shifts around sexual assault, where at one point, you know, a husband could do pretty much whatever he wanted to his wife, including sexual assault. That's not permissible anymore. And even the fact that 2 years ago, our Department of Justice was using, up until 2012, the Department of Justice or our federal government was using a definition of rape in the Uniform Crime Reports that was specific to female victims. It was about being forced. They used the phrase carnal knowledge in the definition of rape, and it had to be a female victim. And the definition was updated just 2 years ago to reflect a greater scope or the greater scope or the to better represent the victims that can potentially be affected by domestic or by sexual assault. So looking at, you know, people who have been penetrated by objects or have been penetrated in a different way other than just, you know, for lack of a better word, vaginal penetration. So it's more inclusive of the gender categories that of people who have been affected by sexual assault. It's more reflective of the types of sexual assault that are out there. So I think we can shift. We can definitely shift the culture around sexual assault. Just we have something like tobacco.
Yeah. Let's go to Pete in Marinette. Hi, Pete.
Hello.
Yes, Pete.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Can you?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? My name's Pete. And I'm from Marinette.
Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, okay. Well, I have two daughters. You know, I'm rather on the older side and stuff like this. But you know, from my experience in life, is you know, number one, you talked about it. Common sense does go a long way. And you know, what I've seen out there with a lot of stuff is, you know, just as long as you don't touch, everything's okay. You know, it's okay to look, but don't touch. And if you do touch, it should be consensual. And, you know, the ability to say stop.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, to talk about it. Talk about it with your friends and everything, your parents or anything. You know, just don't keep it inside of you.
Yeah. So did you talk to your daughters about this before they, I don't know if they're still at home or not, Pete, but did you have these kinds of conversations?
Yes, I have. And, you know, when I was younger, you know, being a father, you know, sometimes the way they dress and stuff, I used to have to bite my tongue. Because, you know, this is America. You have the right to dress any way you want. I mean, if it's, you know, this stuff with, you know, excuses about, oh, it's too tight, therefore, no, that don't cut it. And another thing, I think it was about 20 years ago, I think in Madison, there was a judge, it was an assault thing, and the judge says he agreed with the guy who raped her. Oh, she was dressing inappropriate, therefore she wanted it.
Yeah.
And that judge got thrown out the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no such thing. But that's my opinion.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you for your opinion. It's a valuable one. Pete makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that struck me was Pete talking about his role as a father.
Yes.
And the struggle that we have in terms of parenting and raising our girls and our boys, quite frankly, and in respect to dealing with this issue. So he talked about, in a sense, he was saying how he understood the world and the culture of violence that's out there and the victim blaming. When he was talking about how he would have to bite his tongue if his daughter was wearing something that made her look appealing in a sexual way.
Right.
And it's interesting. I was once in a conference with a group of men. It was a presenter named Tony Porter, and he does work with men, and it's called A Call to Men, and it's around ending violence and ending gender violence. And in that workshop, he sort of called out the group and asked them the question of, you know, what sorts of things do you tell? Imagine yourself, you're a father, and your daughter's going off to college. What kind of things are you talking to her about? And they all start off naming these things about, like, don't walk in the dark alone, and don't take a drink from a stranger, and these sorts of things, right? And then the question became, you know, well, what is that about? And it really kind of distilled it down to all of the fathers or to be fathers, men in the room, sort of recognizing their own distrust of other men and boys. And it was so powerful to see them come to that place. And so also what it really points to is kind of what Pete was also referring to about our need to stand up and not be bystanders who don't say or do anything about it. And because it really is a small group of individuals who are committing these offenses repeatedly,
right,
versus a large number. So one of the points Tony Porter made in his presentation is, how is it that this small group of individuals is committing these offenses? Well, we are all standing by. And so I really appreciated that reference to bystander intervention as well.
Yeah. Do you want to comment on his very honest and, I thought, very smart comments?
Well, there were two things that I really picked up on. One was that he said people have a right to say no. You know, oftentimes in these conversations about sexual assault, people start talking about consent and what consent really is. And what the perception seems to be is that once someone is okay with one form of contact, if they flirted with someone or if they kissed someone or had some kind of contact with them, that in some situations it's okay to then take that one form of contact and use it as permission to do whatever they want to mm-hmm. that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll hear things like, well, if you didn't want to have sex with that person, why did you kiss them? If you didn't want, and you hear these sort of victim-blaming sort of questions, which are all sort of born out of this misunderstanding of consent. And so he makes a very good point that people do have a right to say no, that you can consent to certain kinds of activities and then withdraw your consent. You can consent to things up to a certain point, but that we shouldn't look at it as a victim is okay with certain kinds of contact, and then all of a sudden you have a right to do whatever you want to that person. People do have their autonomy that needs to be respected.
Absolutely. Let's go to Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hello?
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the fact that if it occurs in your family and you try to bring up the subject, it has a lot more ramifications than destroying one person. I am in my late 60s now, and when I tried to bring this up years ago with my family, they basically told me if I don't shut up about it and never bring it up again, basically don't come around.
Ooh.
So it's the ramifications are huge.
You were
I'm so glad that somebody's finally addressing this hideous problem.
You were assaulted by a family member, Mary, and you just kept it quiet forever?
Well, I tried to bring it up 20 years ago, but every time I did, I was called a liar and you name it. And if I didn't stop talking about it, they just said, don't come around anymore.
Mm. Aaron.
You know, that, first of all, you know, I completely respect you, and I it takes a lot to be able to come out and to acknowledge publicly that that's something that happened to you, and to especially have to bring that up with your family and friends is a challenge. So I have the utmost respect for you, and thank you for calling in and sharing your experience. And it is one that a lot of people that have been sexually assaulted and have experienced sexual assault within their family do face. Oftentimes, you know, we'll have stories of sexual assault that come out in the media, and victims' identities are protected for a reason, and we think oftentimes that it's because they're concerned about the public having an idea of who they are, but really what they're afraid of is their friends and their family finding out. It's about people at their school. It's about people that they encounter. And that fear is oftentimes rooted in their fear of being blamed, of being rejected. And so part of why we have Denim Day and part of why we have Sexual Assault Awareness Month is exactly for this reason, is to let people know that when someone comes forward, what do you do, or how can you be supportive of that person instead of doing what happened in this situation where the family, you know, maybe they don't know how to react to it, maybe who knows what their reasoning is for it, but we want to make sure that people have a better idea of how they can react when someone does come forward and disclose. There are a lot of resources out there. People can sometimes feel overwhelmed when a family member discloses to them, but I think what's important for people to take away from Denim Day and from Sexual Assault Awareness Month and from this call-in is that you don't have to feel like you're an expert in everything. You know, if you feel overwhelmed or if someone discloses to you, there are resources out there that even you as a support person, as a loved one, can reach out to so that you can better be able to assist someone who does come forward and disclose. But, you know, I thank you for coming forward and for talking about it. And it is a reality, unfortunately, for a lot of victims, but it's something that we can change, that people can learn more about sexual assault. They can learn how to support a loved one, and they can reach out to resources, too, to figure out how they can help.
Sue, if you're – I realize that some people keep them – this to themselves and maybe let a long time go by before they say anything to anybody. Let's say you're a roommate of a young woman on campus and she comes back totally distraught to a dorm room or the apartment, and eventually it comes out that she has been raped. As somebody who may be a friend, or you get a call from your best friend that this has happened, what is the proper thing to do? Do you go to the police right away? Do you go to a hospital? What do you do?
Really, my approach to responding to somebody who is disclosing a sexual assault is to talk about, one, is to listen and to be supportive. We really want to try to just be that support person that they can talk to and create a safe space for them to share. Because Mary has alluded to, it's very hard to share. And sometimes people have tried to share and it hasn't gone well. Or that's just been shut down. So doing that first and foremost. Another is really around providing the person with an idea about what their options are. So they're really, it is best to stay away from providing direction about what someone should do. What someone should do is what's best for them. And that's going to be different for every person. Usually what I'll do is I'll talk about where somebody can go get mental health counseling and what are the resources in the community. I'll talk about where someone would go if they wanted to file a criminal complaint and press charges. At the university, we have a process where someone can file a grievance for non-academic misconduct or for misconduct. Mm. So I'll talk about that as well. And then, of course, I'll also talk about medical care. So if somebody was in a situation that would warrant medical care, such as STD testing or emergency contraception, or if they would like to get a forensic exam, that sort of thing. Really, it's around just talking about what the options are and being there for them. And if there's a lot of uncertainty, sometimes people know right away, this is what I want to do. And other times there's a lot of ambiguity. And in those cases, I'm generally looking to connect that person with a mental health resource, a support resource in the community that can help them through that decision making.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Mary, thank you very much. And it would probably behoove Mary, even though this happened 20 years ago, she obviously doesn't sound like she's at peace with it still. There's probably a place for her to go to just talk this out where somebody will listen to her, don't you think?
It's not uncommon for people to wait several years before they disclose. Some people never disclose. It's really all up to that survivor to decide, first of all, if they even feel comfortable coming forward. When someone's sexually assaulted, they have a lot of power and control taken away from them. And so the last thing you want to do is force them into anything that they don't want to do. So definitely, as you were saying, you want to make sure that whatever decisions are made about disclosing, getting assistance, are being led by that survivor. There are resources here in Milwaukee for, like, counseling services for people who are looking for assistance. For adult survivors, we have the Healing Center that provides counseling services. For medical services and the services of, like, a sexual assault nurse examiner, we have the Sexual Assault Treatment Center here locally. But there's a host of other resources as well, depending upon the population that the person comes from, sort of the issues that they're trying to get assistance with. There's a number of different resources that someone can tap into.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guests are Aaron Perkins, coordinator of the City of Milwaukee Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, Sue McCarthy, assistant director of the Women's Resource Center at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and today is Denim Day, which is really an international awareness effort focused on believing and supporting survivors of sexual assault and asking people to wear denim in support of that. There is a focus on sexual assault on college campuses here in the Milwaukee area, thus our guests and our focus this hour. More phone calls. We have many of them coming in, so we'll take those calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to an email here. Wants to know how you both feel about self-defense classes and if you have information on resources on this. Her daughter is going to college in the fall for the first time. Sue?
Absolutely. So at UWM and at many college campuses, they do offer self-defense classes. And I think that self-defense classes in and of themselves are fine. A couple of things about them. So one of them is that they're a tool, an empowerment tool for individuals. So they are a way in which an individual can gain skills to help protect themselves. And also just to have a stronger air of confidence when navigating the world.
Right.
Oftentimes, crimes are predatory. Most often, violent crimes are predatory. And the predators are looking for somebody who appears vulnerable. And so in this sense, you do kind of walk through the world with a greater sense of confidence, and that can reduce vulnerability or perceived vulnerability. Self-defense oftentimes, when I talk to instructors, one of the things they talk about most of all is that it's a skill that really needs to be exercised. So like going to a 1.5 hour self-defense class one time during the year is not going to equip you to utilize those skills in a incredibly effective and competent way. So there are sort of muscles that you need to exercise in order to be able to use them well. So oftentimes what I hear is an encouragement for people to engage in something that is almost like a weekly Zumba class or something like that, but it's a centered around self-defense. And the other is really in terms of understanding it as a risk reduction, so that it's just one thing that you might be able to do to reduce risk. But like Mayor Barrett was talking about, if something were to happen to his daughters because they chose to walk alone at night or because they didn't have time for a self-defense class or whatever, that doesn't mean that somehow that individual deserved what had happened or had done something wrong, you know, that on their end. So oftentimes the risk reduction stuff gets tied into the victim blaming.
Yeah. Let's go next to Sharon in Berlin. Hi, Sharon. Or New Berlin.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sharon.
This is really interesting. I've been retired from university campuses since 95. I spent 27 years on them. And times have changed. As an employee of the university system, no matter whether you knew the names or not, if you knew of an incident, it had to be reported to the dean of students. And there were, fortunately, on the Madison campus, we had student health that was active 24/7, and we could encourage women to go there. But the tone that I'm hearing, even from you two, I'm very respectable women, and I respect you both, is that the woman is the victim and the woman is to blame. And as long as we use women's bodies to sell automobiles and other items on television, we will have women will not be respected.
Yeah, I don't think that's coming from either of our guests, certainly, that women are to blame. But, again, a reference to the way we use women on TV, magazines, et cetera.
Yeah, and we were addressing that earlier around sort of the culture of our country that really reproduces and sustains the problem of sexual violence. So I would agree with you completely that one of the biggest parts of this problem is the fact that we have a culture that supports the objectification of women. And I see sexual violence and gendered violence really as a social justice issue on top of a public health issue. I do feel like it is a way in which we maintain a patriarchal society in a way in which oppression is used, or an instrument of oppression.
Let's go next to Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling to share a little bit with you. I'm a sexual assault survivor, and after college, I decided to pursue a career in advocacy, so I now work with victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And I agree wholeheartedly with your guest that the culture in which we live very much sustains this victim-blaming culture that we can't shake. I was raped as an 11-year-old, and it's a suitcase I carry with me throughout my life. I very recently sat in on a sexual assault trial and saw a conviction. And for some reason, I found that incredibly liberating. to see the system work as it's supposed to. And I just think that if we continue to allow the media to exploit women, we're never going to get anywhere. So as women and as feminist men, we need to fight back. We need to use our words and speak with our representatives and do everything we can to protect the next generation of women.
Erin.
I'm trying to digest that. I'm glad you were able to have that experience of being able to see the system work as it should. And, you know, both Sue and I agree with you that we are in this culture that in many ways kind of perpetuates the sort of culture of sexual violence and sexual assault, and absolutely that it can be changed. And I suppose also getting back to the other caller about putting blame on women or on the victims themselves, I would hope that anyone doing this work, and what is universally said at every conference that we go to, every meeting we go to, everything that we're involved in, is that the survivor is not at fault. That is the core of sexual assault work, is that the victims are not at fault. It is the fault lies solely with the perpetrator, and that the perpetrator is the person that thinks that they have a right to a victim, to use them for their own sexual gratification, and that there is an opportunity for them to take advantage of a person, and that's why they do it. That is how sexual assault happens. Sexual assault does not occur because someone wore a short skirt. It does not happen because you walked in a dark alley. It doesn't happen because of anything that that victim did. It happens mm-hmm. because of the perpetrator and the perpetrator alone. So I thank you for calling in, and absolutely, you know, as one colleague to another in the same field, we're on the same page as far as the fact that this culture of ours is certainly helping to perpetuate sexual assault and the victimization of women.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Did you have something you wanted to say,
Sarah? I just wanted to thank Sarah for bringing up sort of elevating attention to offender accountability as a very important piece of this puzzle. So the mayor, I think, or you, Kathleen, may have mentioned about 97% of rapists going unconvicted. And our system does need to get a lot better at improving offender accountability, and it's a major piece of this puzzle. So the fact that you had the chance to see the system work well in that regard is super exciting to hear, and I really hope that we all engage in working to help our judicial system do that. It's a tough situation that everyone's in, but I do think that there are ways that we can get creative and get out of the box and do better at it.
To say nothing of all the people who just get away with it, right? Mm-hmm. Because of all the trauma surrounded with reporting something, mm-hmm. which is understandable how it's traumatic, necessary but traumatic. They're just walking the streets, doing it again and again, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for your call. Let's go next to Lori in Eau Claire. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to quick say first, going back to a previous caller, Mary, if Mary's still listening, I'm so sorry that happened to her. I just had to say that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to touch just, you've been talking quite a bit on victim blaming, and you know, there's so many different aspects of sexual assault that our society just needs to work on. But one thing that I try to do, when the conversation of someone being sexually assaulted comes up, and sadly one of the first questions often is, well, what was she wearing? I always try to stop it there and say, you know what, that's really the wrong question. Why would he do that? Mm-hmm. Or why was he lurking in the bushes? Or, you know, they were friends. Why would he do that? And just sort of take the eyes off the victim to where I feel they belong with the perpetrator. So I guess I want to say that. And then also I have a 21-year-old stepdaughter who is going to college. And some of your callers talked about, and you have, what do you say to young girls as they go off to college? And a lot of times the theme is, you know, Don't walk home alone, which is very important, and don't walk alone after dark, especially. And one thing that I really tried to get through to my wonderful stepdaughter is just to always trust her instincts and be aware of her surroundings, and that oftentimes as women, we might get that feeling like, ooh, I can't explain it, but I feel unsafe. But sometimes we talk ourselves out of it and think, well, there doesn't seem to be a rational reason. But you know what? I just always told her, please trust that. And it probably means you're somewhere that you need to get out of.
Right. And thank you very much for the call. Can somebody give me in 5 seconds what you should say to your daughters?
I would say that one of the other, so everything you've said is excellent. And I think the only thing that stood out to me at the end of that also was talking about undoing the myth and having our young women understand that the majority of sexual assaults do happen at the hands of somebody that we do know in some way, and that often alcohol is used as a way to facilitate that assault.
Yeah, thank you both so much. It was so informative. You're really good at what you do. Thanks to Sue McCarthy, Assistant Director of the Women's Resource Center at UW-Milwaukee, Aaron Perkins, Coordinator of the City of Milwaukee Commission on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and thanks to Mayor Tom Barrett for being with us. Tomorrow, something totally different. Every now and then, you got to laugh, and we're going to talk about this major study on the funniest cities in the world. One of them is in the Midwest. Number one is